And we give out the awards. One of the ways of the Buddhism is described is study, practice, realization. Pariyati pati 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 vedi, pati pati pati. Pariyati is study, pati pati is practice, pati vedi is realization. So what do you study? There is the noble truth of suffering. This noble truth must be understood. This has been understood. There is a noble truth of the cause of suffering. This cause must be abandoned. It has been abandoned. That's what you study. When you practice, there is the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. This path must be developed. It has been developed. That's what you practice. When you realize, there's the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. The cessation has been realized. That must be, it should be realized, it has to be realized, it has been realized. So you can study a lot. Ajahn Chah told me, don't read for 5 years. He said, study this. Study your heart, study suffering. So hopefully the information that you get leads you back to the heart and to that very core issue which we all want to sort out. We don't want to suffer. We want to be happy in whatever way we think about that. So study, and you probably have something to study all the time, right? And also I think it's important to see that as something that can happen in any moment. So it sounds like a very kind of cumulative thing, and in the future there's some end point of enlightenment. I'm sure that that's true too, that time thing, but the realization is always here and now. So any time between two thoughts, at the time or the end of a sense of becoming, there is just this. That's the realization of the end of suffering. And that gives you a lot of confidence. Trust in that. And in the Noble Eightfold Path, I've sort of alluded to right understanding and right thought, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And the middle three, right action, right speech, right livelihood, I haven't talked much about. That's really as monks, we have what we call the Vinaya. We have our rules and disciplines and reflections around the lifestyle. And for the laity, the Buddha couldn't lay out such detailed instructions, because each layperson has their own social kind of context. We have really one context. We have our community, so it's possible to set up ethical boundaries, etiquettes, ways of mindfulness, which a whole group of men and women can agree upon. The lay life is a bit more complicated than that. So the basic framework for lay practice is the five precepts, and that's a very kind of rough outline, so that there's a kind of pertinent question here. Are the five precepts an all or nothing package deal? Well, you can joke about it. You say, yeah, well, which one I'll do? Number five, get stoned tonight, what the heck? So obviously they are all important. Maybe if we just look at them before we undertake them, those who want to. On page 73, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. If you look at that as a mirror to impulses of violence, be they minor or major, then that mirror awakes you to an unwholesome impulse. So if I feel annoyed at black flies, which I kind of sense in my karma somewhere now, Is it looming? Right? So the definitely, I'm sure the tendency will be murder. But to reflect on that, because what you're looking at is in stream of consciousness, those impulses which are skillful and those impulses which are unskillful. So if you take an absolutist position, you get, you know, what do you do when there's moral ambiguity? You know, what do you do when, like, all kinds of difficult medical issues around keeping people alive, or, you know, it's a very kind of ethically very complicated time now. But if you're observing your own conscious experience and looking at intentions and looking at impulses which are unskillful and skillful, then that is a kind of really good boundary to reflect upon. So if I'm in a monastery and we have a rat infestation, right? And this actually happened. And the health authority comes and says, if you don't kill those rats, we're closing you down. What do you do? Well, I'm not answering your question for you. You have to answer that question yourself. Well, you could all move out and let the rats have the place. I guess that would be a very noble thing to do. But so there, you know, when there is moral ambiguity, there isn't one answer, and I like that myself. I like that we, each of us, has to decide, of, you know, what is appropriate here, and not to take the easiest way out. You know, not just take the kind of most convenient way out, and because moral decisions quite often require, they're difficult. They're quite difficult. And then if we step outside the boundaries of those precepts, say, okay, whatever the consequences are, I take responsibility for that, but then to return to them. All right, so if a community decides, well, it's us, the rats, and they call in the exterminator, give him the karma. No, there's still responsibility there. There's still responsibility because one's making intention. But then you go back to the standard. You kind of go back to that. So it's not this kind of rigidity, but it is a deep respect for the laws of karma, that any action which is violent has some kind of consequence, both for ourselves and others. So in that sense, you could see, well, how could you not at least undertake to try to reflect on that precept? It would be a logical thing to do in any spiritual life. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. And again, just a sense of honesty, impeccability is very important. The opposite of the first precept, we also consider opposites. So there's compassion is the opposite of violence. And the second precept is generosity as opposed to thievery. It's a different mind state. So generosity has a result, but cheating has a result too. So say in our tradition, we have a very, very strict code around taking that which is not given. So say we're very careful with copyright. We don't just say copy computer programs from one to another, or if someone has a tape of a teacher when there's copyright on it, we don't just kind of make five copies and send them around the monasteries. No, because that's copyright. That's taking that which is not given. Now that's more difficult, isn't it? It's more difficult. But it's right, isn't it? So and what happens with a sense of impeccability, you can get neurotic. You know, I remember when I was in Northumberland, we were getting a monastery going, we were really broke. I mean, we had about £10 in the bank, you know. And we had this one committee member who was neurotically moral. And we spent like hours, or it seemed to me, it really wasn't that long, discussing ethical banking. We had £10. And he's just obsessed with, you know. So that kind of mind just gets so finicky and uptight that doesn't see that even that you can get attached to. But you think about it. When I live an impeccable life and I don't go with maybe a standard in the company or wherever is to You know, it's like not getting caught is the moral standard. That's not going to make me feel very good, right? That's not going to really make me feel happy or proud in a good way. So you can say, now why would you not reflect on that precept? Obviously that seems to be a way of purifying the heart. Kamesu, undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. So this would be either, it would be like infidelity or just hedonism around sexuality. But it actually means more than sexuality, because Kamesu really is about all sensual experience. So it's not just about sexuality, it's just the tendency to always be absorbed into sense experience. So in a sense, this is also about restraint. And restraint leads to restraint is dignified, isn't it? Restraint done as a kind of puritanical repression is just awful. But restraint is dignity. That makes sense, doesn't it? I'm going to do that which is dignified. So in terms of this precept, its sort of basic presentation is to be faithful in relationship, sexual fidelity, to be honest and to be loving in relationship. But if we take it in a broader context, it would be like, how do you teach this to a six-year-old? Right? How do you teach that? Well, you broaden it to like, don't play on the internet all the time, because the child's mind is always just absorbed into external things. Restraint on peanuts, or that damn lasagna, or whatever it is. It's like coming home. Then that precept becomes very meaningful. And a lot of people do that. Like maybe they just find reading a lot of newspapers, a kind of news junkie, they find their mind gets really agitated. So they say, well, I'm just going to read half an hour a day or something, developing some restraint around it. And that's a huge area, the whole thing about sense restraint, in a good way, huh? In a good way. So the fourth precept, to undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. This is you can work so much on this one. So right speech is speech which is in concord, speech which is truthful, speech which is beautiful, speech which is according to Dhamma. Wrong speech is divisive speech, like divisive gossip, lying, swearing, and just being downright stupid. Something like that. So then the question comes up, well, can I crack a joke? Is that allowed in Buddhism? Well, yes and no. If my humor hurts you, then no, because the intention is coming to put you down, right? But if the humor is to lighten a situation, it'd be quite skillful. So it's, again, reflecting, where's the impulse coming from? Where, you know, is it wholesome or is it unwholesome? So it acts as a mirror. So I see myself in a situation where someone is ripping someone else down, and I say, oh, really? I say, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going to feed that negativity in society or in my own mind. That leads to, you think about, when I have spoken about people unkindly behind their back, when I see them, what do I think? I hope they haven't heard. Fear. You know, I think, oh, why did I say that? You think he told him that I said that? Fear. Honoring friendships and being faithful to right speech brings you a lot of sense of, the kind of goodness and confidence in the heart. Sura mera yama japa madatana vamani sikapadang samadhi. Yami, undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drug which lead to carelessness. So like getting drunk and stoned, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, your samadhi's not going to be great. Right? So hallucinogenics, mushrooms, blah, 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 blah. all the things. But the question then comes up, well, I have a friend asked me, well, we just drink wine at the table. That's just what we do. Well, I said, well, do you walk away from the table? Crawl away. So it's like, what does it do to your mind? What does it do to your mind? Is it wholesome? Is it unwholesome? Is it skillful? So some people, that precept, they are kind of absolute teetotalers. They say, I just want to be known as someone who doesn't go there. Other people, if they're at dinner in a big family gathering and there's a toast, then they'll join in the toast because they feel that's harmonious or whatever. So it's not for someone like me to kind of police this thing. It's for you. It's a personal thing. It's a personal choice that you make a choice. Not from fear. You know, not from fear, but from wisdom, from restraint, from nobility, from those good qualities. So is it a package deal? Mm-hmm. Which of those would you like not to do? It's not logical, is it? But I think sometimes, I know one friend, he didn't want to take the five precepts because his mind gets so uptight about any rules. I found it, that he just found that makes it difficult for him. That's interesting. But what's the principle is to live an ethical life, obviously, to protect ourselves and others from impulses which are destructive, because they are a real protection. And then, of course, developing the opposites, developing compassion, developing generosity, developing restraint, developing right speech, and developing sobriety have a beautiful tone to the mind, have a lovely tone to the mind. And they are the foundation for enlightenment. You can't have a clear mind if one's social life is confused in these kinds of ways. So it's not necessary to end the retreat. You cannot take the precepts. You're still allowed to talk. You're not stuck in the eight precepts forever. but if you'd like to take the five precepts, maybe if we go to 72, I think before someone asks one. So also, when this is a kind of ritualized. It's a ritual that's been going on in Theravada Buddhism for over 2,000 years, and the first is the same as we started. We chant the Namo Tassa. So I would chant Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa three times, and then you can follow if you'd like. And then the refuge is Buddha. So Buddha as awake mind, Dhamma as the way things are according to truth, and Sangha as the life of spiritual companionship and the development of the path. And